Hello, true believers, and welcome to Dexhelsior, a podcast about the Marvel Champions living card game by Fantasy Flight Games. I am your host, I am John, and I am joined by a fantastic crew here tonight. We have Sam. How's it going, Sam?
I'm pretty good. Just slowly waiting for this game to come out.
It's almost here. It's so close. In fact, when this releases, it should be out officially. Ben, how's it going?
Oh, pretty good.
Nice. Are you excited about the game coming out?
Oh, I'm very, 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 very excited. I might actually buy sleeves for this game. Who knows?
I pre-ordered, like, how many? I think, like, 6 or 7 packs of the 50-card sleeves from FFG. Just in excitement, because I want to have plenty of sleeves for this game, because I hate running out of sleeves when I've got, like, a new product, and I don't have enough sleeves to sleeve everything I want to.
Yeah. 600 sleeves.
You beat me.
I haven't sleeved Lord of the Rings or Arkham, but I might sleeve this because, you know, because the basic counter cards release specifically. I want to make sure those stay fresh.
Nice. And over there I see Matt. How's it going, Matt?
Doing really great. I almost have it. My store said I'm getting my pack this the box this Friday.
Woohoo! Nice. Then there's Carlos. How's it going, Carlos?
I'm doing great, though I am trying to control the rage and envy that comes with the fact that I'm going to get the game later than everybody else. 2 to 6 days later.
No. Why? Shake fist at heavens.
That happens when you live in an island.
All right. Well, guys, I have a question for you all. How excited are you for the game coming out? Don't everybody say anything at once.
I thought you were going to like ask each. I'm really excited. I cannot wait. And I really, really cannot wait to introduce this game to some friends. I think this is going to be it. The cooperative LCG that my play group is going to like.
Woo! Matt, what about you? How excited are you?
I'm really excited. Can't you tell from my voice?
I can always tell from your voice. You're always just so... You're an enthusiastic person, Matt.
But yeah, no, this is going to be good for my group as well. It's just nice, easy to pick up, and easy to play.
Excellent. Ben, are you excited?
Yeah, I'm pretty excited. I'm super pumped to introduce this to my friends. I think I know a couple people that really like this game.
Woohoo! I'm ready to party. Sam, are you ready to party? How excited are you?
Really excited. I'm going to be playing this game a lot with my dad. Since I'm in college, I don't really... I'm not living at the house anymore, so it'll be nice to see him more.
That's awesome. Man, that's so cool that your dad plays with you. Like, my dad never would play these kind of games with me growing up. Like, I mean, we would play basic games. We'd play normie games, but nothing like this complicated, you know. And still.
We used to play Destiny together, and there's some games we play, but this we were both very excited about, and so...
Nice.
I'm excited to play. Oh, cool. Yeah.
I envy how much my kid is going to be able to play with me.
Oh, yeah. You got to raise them right. You got to raise them up and be like, hey, your mom's not playing these games with me. This is up to you, son. You got to raise them right. I'm so excited for this game. My copy came in this Monday, and I've played. It's so fun to play with physical cards. I love it.
I had a question from you, John, based on the picture that you sent when you got it.
Yes.
Who's more excited, you or your dog?
Yes, that is my pupperino. That is Totoro. He is he's super excited. He's almost as excited as I am. Of course, that could be just his excitement when I come home from the end of the workday. So, I don't know. I'll try to
make him listen to this podcast, to this episode, to see if he can get new tips and learn how to play the game.
There we go. Exactly, because that's what our topic is going to be tonight, listeners. New player tips.
So I can see it in his eyes. He wants to play Captain Marvel.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, my dog. My dog's. I think he's a Captain Marvel type.
Well, he looked good in the helmet.
He did. We'll see. If I can find a doggy Captain Marvel helmet, I'll post a picture. So let's go on before we hit the newsroom. Marvel Musings with Matt, the part of the show where Matt gives us some Marvel trivia. What do you got for us, Matt?
Well, I guess this isn't as much trivia right now, but I'm going to advocate if you're looking to get into comics, get onto Marvel Universe, the app. It's for the price of basically 2 comics a month. You can read whatever you want from the library. And, well, they don't have it up yet, but the new X-Men, which just came out, is very fun if you're a fan of sci-fi or mutants in general. Check it out.
I'm going to have to double up on that. I haven't read an X-Men comic in decades, and getting into the X-Men with House of X, you could just get right on that. It was an amazing series.
Nice. Very cool. Well, before our newsroom, one more thing. Just a reminder, listeners, on November 12th, we will be having our live recording special. So if you would like a chance to win a set of the alternate art heroes from the core set, please be listening live. Come on, we're going to start at 8:30 Eastern Time on our Discord channel. I'll post a link to it in the description. And you can just come on. We'll have trivia. It's going to be a fun time of just sharing stories from the game. Hopefully everybody has the game by that point, and we can all just have an awesome time talking about how amazing this game is. So we hope to see you November 12th, 8:30 Eastern on our Discord channel. And with that, let's go to the Daily Bugle newsroom. What's happened in news, Sam?
Today on October 29th was the live stream giveaway. So today it was Caleb, Michael, and one of the hosts, and they played a game of Claw. And in the middle, they had a giveaway. I didn't win anything. I think one of our listeners, Scott Hill, won.
Nice.
Correct me if I'm wrong. I'm pretty sure he was the one. He was one of the ones who
Congrats,
won.
Congrats, Scott. I think I saw him posting in Discord. Yeah.
It was a really good game. I'm not going to spoil anything, but a very good, satisfying ending to the game. Also, the release date is Friday when this episode will be out. So hopefully everyone will have the game. And there was also a deck building article called Building the Suit. They just talked about deck building, how you can go about deck building, and what you need. So you need your 15 hero cards, your nemesis set, and an aspect, and then you fill your deck up to 40 to 50 cards. And then they just reaffirmed that the hero packs will have a already playable deck in it, but you can deck build by taking the cards out and building your own decks with it. That's nice. Everything.
What was the giveaways they were doing for the stream? Like, I didn't really look into it because I knew I wasn't going to be able to watch the live stream. I still need to go
back
and watch it.
Gave away 2 core sets. But actually, the stream, in the background, you could see they had a setup where it was the core set, and then you could see Ms. Marvel, Green Goblin, and Captain America. But FFG said, see if you can spot the surprise back there. And either there was a pack behind Captain America that if you look to it, it looked like it was Thor's red cape that was peeking out the side. Or it was Wrecking Crew, but I don't know if any of them were red. Because I don't know.
No, they don't.
So that was definitely, it looked like it was Thor's cape.
Yep.
No Thor spoilers today, but
oh, man. There. I can't wait, because I think he's going to be the aggression hero. And I want some new aggression cards. I want aggression.
I think they already confirmed he's the aggression hero.
Oh, did they already confirm? Okay, excellent. I want more aggression cards. I think that's going to be the aspect I like the most. Just for funsies.
And that is everything.
Awesome. Well, with that said, let's move on to our main topic for tonight, which is going to be new player tips. So, since this episode is coming out around this on the same day as the official release day, we thought it'd be a good idea to, you know, get those new players that are into this game. If this is your first LCG, or if this is maybe only like you've only bought into slightly to other LCGs, let's get you some tips. Let's give something that everybody can learn tonight. So we're here to learn tonight and how to be a better player at this game, and just some great strategies. So with that said, we've divided it up into a few different topics. Our first topic that we want to discuss some tips on is deck building. And to kick that off, Sam, you are a main resident deck builder. Why don't you start us off with this one?
Okay, so deck building is not as easy and simple as that when I come across in this game. Yes, there aren't as many cards yet, but there's still a lot of choices. And now, you can get away with just playing the starter decks. They're all fine. Captain Marvel Leadership is the best starter deck, I believe, in my opinion. But there's some very, there's stuff that you should almost always do. Try to include the double resource cards, almost all three, because typically you're going to need them. Now, you in protection, you might not need the power of, but the double resource cards always going to be helpful. The Avengers Mansion to the Helicarrier distribution, I try to include 2 and 1, but I know we have some varying beliefs on that. So does anyone want to speak on that?
Do you, Sam, could you kind of like explain the difference between Avengers Mansion and Helicarrier? Like, why only one Helicarrier and not two?
So Avengers Mansion lets you draw a card. Exhausting to draw a card, or you can choose a player to draw a card. And Helicarrier lets you reduce the cost of a card by the next card played this phase by one. One card is more options, whereas one less cost, well, technically you could use them for the same thing. By having a card, you have more options. And let's say, for example, like Make the Call. Avengers Mansion doesn't work with Make the Call because you can't use it to reduce the cost of the ally you want to play, because you'd be reducing the cost to Make the Call.
What do you mean, how?
So Avengers Mansion would always be more helpful in that situation. But I prefer it because there's more options rather than less cost.
I agree, because the upfront cost, if just one less, that's very small over the terms of value you can get out of it. If you're taking a turn off to invest like this, would you invest in Helicarrier? Helicarrier is lower impact. If you're taking a turn off to invest, you want to invest for the card draw.
That's good. I like that.
Yeah, and also another thing that makes some people like don't like Avengers Mansion that much at the beginning when the cards got spoiled, because it's like 4 costs. It's going to take you four turns to kind of like recoup that 5 if you include the card. What I think it's important is that the way this game works, particularly in the first few turns, is that you're not doing things that are that impactful. And a turn that you only play in an Avengers Mansion, and then a turn where you have 7 cards in hand and you can do bigger things and you can impact the board in a better way, it's a good thing. Like, that's how sometimes you want to play the game. And a good example to see that is She-Hulk. Like, Gamma Slam costs 4. So when you're in She-Hulk form, you can't pay for that. So if you spend a turn preparing, having an Avengers Mansion that draws you the card that allows you to play Gamma Slam, then you have like a good turn. So that's a good way to like look at the value of the card.
I want to preface, you don't have to play Avengers Mansion on the first turn or Helicarrier on the first turn. There are turns that I don't, because it's not the most beneficial option. But having card draw is one of the best things you can have, because that opens up your turn so much more. If you were just limited to your hand size every single turn, you're seeing less cards, which means you're seeing less options, which means your game is going to be more restricted than having that Avengers Mansion. Now you're cycling through your deck quicker. You're seeing more cards that you want to play quicker. And mm-hmm. So I think this card will always be better than Helicarrier, because you have cards.
Yeah. And this, even if you have to ditch, four cards to get this Avengers Mansion out, this is not like other LCGs where, oh man, I'm never going to see those cards again. Like, I don't think there's been a single game I've played where I haven't gone through my entire deck and reshuffled and started going through it again. It's very different than Lord of the Rings, for example, or even, I haven't played Arkham, but I hear Arkham as well, where in Lord of the Rings, I don't think I ever go through my entire deck, unless I'm playing a deck that is specifically, built to do that, like Aristor. So you're going to see those cards again. And Avengers Mansion helps you see those cards faster. Carlos, do you have anything on deck building you want to get out?
It's very important to keep the resources in mind when deck building, particularly on the hero that you're doing. Their heroes, Iron Man being the best example, they're very hungry for a specific type of resource, or even more than one type of resource. The wild cards, the wild icons, become really, really important in that type of setting. So sometimes, since the way that the game works, that you're drawing your cards so quickly, you're going through your deck so quickly, it is worth to consider sacrificing even like a couple cards that might work better in your deck, but they don't have the resource icon that you need to feel the better cards in your deck. So you got to keep that in mind when building and not just say, oh, these are the best cards, I'm just going to put them in. Look at that icon, and it's important. And in that regards, I think that when deciding, when you're including cards, just because you need the icon, not because they're actually good, I have the philosophy that a cheap card is a better than an expensive card, because an expensive card that is not part of your plan, it's going to cost you so much to play. It's going to change your turn. Well, a cheap card that costs zero or one, it's going to have low impact. So it's not going to bother you with your game plan. And it's just going to be there for that resource that you want.
Nice. I have a tip that I'll throw out there. When deck building for the first time in this game, if this is like you're opening the box and you just want to play and you want to deck build, Justice and Leadership are your friends right out of the box. Those two, I think a lot of the community has mainly agreed that those two aspects are very powerful. Justice, mainly because it helps you with your timer in this game, which is the scheme, the main scheme the villain is going against. Justice has a lot of ways to remove threat, a lot of ways to keep threat from being placed. And so Justice really helps you have more time to get your board state set up and delay the villain and whatever they're doing. Leadership is probably the best aspect out of the box. And we've gone into it before, but I'll let somebody else have the fun on this one. Matt, why don't you... why is leadership the best right out of the box?
Well, there's a few simple facts. Well, the first one is they have some very good card draw. Allies are supposed to be weakened by the fact that there's only one of them, but Make the Call lets you use them over and over. So if you get Nick Fury, you can keep playing Nick Fury every turn, and you just go through your deck to find those super strong cards right away. Secondly is the fact that allies can thwart or attack. So you can bring out, say, Nick Fury, and early on you can thwart to stabilize the game, but then when you need to do damage, they can attack. And the last and probably the biggest thing is allies can block for you. That can save you from a significant 3, even 6 damage that you would ordinarily take and force you to flip back a lot for more, which causes the threat to advance. But them in play lets you just stay in hero mode and keep chugging on.
I like it. Ben, do you have any tips you want to add?
One interesting thing is, one thing that's not obvious is that the power of cards, like power of leadership, power of aggression, they make your 2 and 3 and 4 cost aspect cards better than they seem. So you might have a card that costs like Uppercut is 3 for 5 damage, which just looks like, oh, okay, but most heroes have better damage. But if you have that and the power of aggression in your hand, it makes it like you're like, oh, I can just play this, and it kind of knocks the cost down a little bit. And yeah, that sort of thing, like, it's not obvious until you start playing, but the power of cards like really help play more expensive aspect cards is, I guess, what I'm trying to say.
So do you guys think you always put 2 of those power of cards even in protection, or what do you think?
I have not. No. In protection.
Not at the moment in protection, but soon.
You just got to look at how many targets you have in your deck for that are 2 cost or higher of that aspect.
Yeah.
I'd probably want at least 10 targets in your deck.
Yeah.
Probably a bit more than that.
And someone like Black Panther, who has 3 copies of Vibranium, which is the 2 resource wild resource card, I'm a little less lenient to put in the power of cards, because those kind of replace that for me innately. Now, I think it also might depend on your aspect, but I don't want to have too many resource cards, because there's times in the game where you'll draw a hand that's all resource cards, and it feels really bad, and it happens more often the more resources you have in your deck. And those turns, you're not doing anything, and then sometimes you feel like you have to discard some of those resource cards to fill your hand up, which now you're wasting resources. So it's a balance that you have to think about when you're deck building.
But one thing, and don't forget about that wild icon on those resource cards. So I kind of disagree with Matt a little that he 10 cards where they're with a cost 2 or more to justify them. In a deck like, for example, Justice Iron Man, which kind of rounds 10 cards, but even if you would run less than 10 Justice 2 or more costed cards, that wild resource is so important to like just trigger off flying on your boots that makes it worth it to include. So, I mean, we already talked about looking at the resource, but when you're with this card, that's something that you can consider also.
That's a good point. Matt, do you have any other deck building tips that you want to say?
I guess my biggest thing is figure out what you want your hero to be doing and focus on that. If you're planning on fighting a lot, focus on stuff that makes you do damage better. If your job is, like, if you're playing in a group and you want to handle a threat, focus on the threat.
Also, don't think that just because you're getting 15 hero cards, the deck building is going to be automatic. Like, you should consider how the cards that you're adding work with the cards that you have to include with your signature cards. Sometimes, depending if you're going multiplayer or if you're going solo, it's better to build on it, like, take She-Hulk and add aggression in and just go all in and just make sure that you're dealing the most damage every turn. Or if you're going solo and you need to kind of like fill in the blanks, you know, if you're not thwarting good, add in, you know, play Justice. If you need defense or a little bit more versatility, play leadership or play protection. So look at those 15 cards and then decide where you're going to add.
That's good. Anything else before we move on from this deck building strategy?
Oh, I have a question. Do you guys feel like putting in a couple cards to counter your nemesis is a good idea or not?
That's a good question.
I would say it depends on the nemesis.
If I'm playing Black Panther, do I want to include something like Haymaker just in case Killmonger comes out, because I know I can't kill him with my Black Panther upgrades, and I can use a Haymaker and Black Panther to kill him in one turn. Is that something you think about? Do you ever think about your nemesis when deck building?
Huh.
I never have. Honestly, I've had much trouble with Killmonger. You can just attack him or retaliate him or use allies or something. Like, it's usually not that hard. But I really haven't ever...
And then sometimes you got somebody like Iron Man's nemesis who counters your deck so hard that if you want to play around him, you're basically making your deck worse, like much worse. And I wouldn't do it. I just try to risk it. And Shadow of the Past, you don't always get it in solo. If you're getting it in multiplayer, you can't plan for countering everybody's nemesis.
Right.
So I personally wouldn't, but like Ben, I hadn't thought about it. So maybe now I'll start thinking about it.
That's good. Yeah, because I'd never thought about that. That might be something I think about now in deck building. Now with She-Hulk, mostly like She-Hulk's nemesis, Titania, is not that threatening to me. Honestly, the times that she's come out, I just kill her, and she just goes away, and that's the end of it.
Yeah,
and you have built-in counter with 1-2 punch. That's a built-in counter to Titania.
Yeah, so
and then Captain Marvel's seems pretty straightforward too. You just attack him and take him out
and kill a sides game. Yeah, and that's pretty straightforward. Whiplash really is, I think, probably one of the worst. I think his is such a hard counter specifically to Iron Man that
and Captain Marvel.
And Captain Marvel really too. as Carlos said, it just depends on the nemesis, whatever it is.
His treacheries are the worst.
They're really bad.
Just for preface, one of his treacheries is each player discards the top 5 cards of the deck and deals a damage to their hero for each energy icon discarded. Today me and Carlos played a game right before. He was playing Justice Iron Man, I was playing Leadership Captain Marvel, and we got that card to come up, and I discarded an energy absorption and three other energy icons. So I'd had to take 6 damage from that one card. So it's not, if you know your deck is full of energy, which maybe even Thor might hit it, depending on how Thor is built. That card will actually hit you, and it'll come out of nowhere, and it's ended games for some people.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you can't deck build around it. It's like, let me make my deck worse. Let me make Repulsor Blast, which is Iron Man's best card, arguably. And let's just make it worse. It's like, I gotta counter this guy. So.
And yeah, because like first off, Shadow of the Past is gonna come out. Then that card has got to come out. So you're deck building around one card, which is a one of in the deck, and the other card. How many copies of the energy absorption are in the deck? Does anybody know off the top of your head?
Energy two. Absorption? Two.
Or not energy absorption, the bad treachery that kills it's you. Two. It's two. There's two copies of that one. Okay, so it's. I just don't think it's worth deck building specifically for that. That you're making you're making your deck objectively worse just for this off chance that this happens.
I meant more towards the Nemesis and side scheme in general.
It's just one.
Oh, it's only one. Okay.
One?
It's the electric whip attack that it's two.
Okay, cool.
Okay.
All right. Yeah.
Well, let's move on. So now that your deck is built, you're ready to go up against your first villain. What is some basic strategy that you need to know going into this game? Let's have Matt kick this one off. Matt, what is your idea of some basic strategy that somebody should know going into their very first game of Marvel Champions?
I think the basic thing is look at how you can lose. Because there's two main ways you're going to lose. You lose if the main scheme advances, or you lose if your hero gets knocked out. So you need to watch out for if the threat's starting to get advanced, if we have a bunch of heroes in Alter Ego mode. You need to watch out for the threat and get threat down. If everybody is low on health, you might have to switch out, in which case the threat's also a danger then.
Ooh, that's a good point. Yeah, multiple heroes in Alter Ego form at the same time can really jack that threat up.
Yeah, if you want visible proof of that, the Team Covenant, the first Expert Ultron stream, is a very good example of that. Because that's one of the main reasons they lost, is both of them were in Alter Ego mode, and the threat went up, and it almost, I think it caused them to lose, or almost lose, and it just messed up their whole game from there.
Yeah. So that's a definite balance. You gotta have tempo versus stabilizing. So you've got to be able to build a base for which to skyrocket off of, basically. You need to make sure you get your core cards down first round through your deck, get your Avengers Mansions out, get your all your cards, like if you're She-Hulk, which I play all the time, you're getting your Focus Rage down. Those are the cards you really want to get through so that you can actually have a hand size in hero form. But for any hero, you want, you know, your baseline so that once that's established, you have a foundation set. Matt, you've already given something. Sam.
So I think there's some things that you really have to consider. What is this card going to do for me? If I play this now, what will it do for me in the long run? So for example, in Avengers Mansion, if you're behind, like let's say it's like the second or third turn and you're behind, you might not want to play that card because that might hit you and slow you down just enough to that you'll get overrun. And there's cards that you might want to play that'll help you stabilize. I think the biggest thing is just when you are going to play a card, read its text. And like, this is a big thing. Read the cards and like think about it. Don't just be like, oh, I know this card is good. I'm going to play it. Look at it and see and ask yourself, what is this going to do? Will this help me in the long run?
I got a question, and I don't know if this is basic strategy, because it's when playing Nick Fury, which is basic because you always should run him and play him.
Yeah.
But if you're trying, like Sam, you're saying don't play a match trying to stabilize. If you play a Nick Fury on a board when you're trying to stabilize, and that damage thwart, like that 2 thwart or 4 damage that he does when he comes in, will help you stabilize. Do you still go for the 3 cards to get that like that tempo and get the cards that you need for your deck to be a good deck, or do you just stabilize and take that breather?
So I think that's also going to depend on maybe your hero or the cards you've played already or the current state. If you have, let's say you're playing Black Panther and you drop Nick Fury and you know in your deck there's still four Wakanda Forevers because you've only seen one. Maybe I'll just take the cards, try and get one of those, and that will stabilize for me. I think it's the hardest part about Nick Fury is and his abilities is what'll be the most helpful, and you might think the cards is most helpful when it might not be. It's a very easy trap to fall into. It's something you have to watch, so it really depends. I can't give a definite answer because I don't know. It depends on what the game is.
So doing. To be aware of what's in your deck, basically.
Yeah,
that's good.
I think I'm going to mention now, tempo, for those who are unfamiliar with the term, is basically the idea of time in the game, because time is a resource you also have to spend. Every extra round is more cards you're drawing from the encounter deck, and the closer you get to more acceleration. So you got to weigh... This will slow down my game to win, but it'll give me a long-term advantage.
Yeah. In relation to that, almost all the heroes have like a really powerful damage dealing event or something, and that's one shot. I wouldn't play like Swinging Web Kick to do 8 damage to the villain on turn 1 unless I have literally nothing else to do. Like, you might use it to kill a minion, maybe, if the villain starts to play. But I would use those resources to put something into play that will help you turn after turn. Like an Avengers Mansion, or, you know, I don't know, Spider-Man's Aunt May, or...
Helicarrier.
Or, like, an upgrade, like...
Web like shooters, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so I would... Or an ally that can help you turn after turn, because... Then that's really what you should be looking for in your opening hand, is something that'll last more than one turn.
I'm going to dissent it, because you guys have been talking about stabilizing and keeping the threat down. That's a viable strategy, but I think there's also the alternate viable strategy of a full rush. You race the villain, and instead of going after the threat, you just punch them hard, fast, and just as much as you can.
Right, She-Hulk.
That's right. That's my baby. That's my girl.
That can work.
Because you're depending too much on the cards you draw.
Yeah, and when you have multiple players, it only works if all the players are going aggro, because if not, you have more health and less players, less damage to do it with.
Right.
It's better solo, or if you have like two aggressive early games, like say Spider-Man with a swinging web kick and an aggro, or a She-Hulk. It'll be more viable the more damage we can get out, but in larger groups, it'll definitely be better to stabilize.
I think for a newer, like a player who hasn't played the game yet, has still learning it, I would wait for that to just go full aggro. For anyone who's played Lord of the Rings, everyone knows you tried the mono tactics deck in the core set and you got smashed immediately.
That was actually my first win.
What? You're the lucky man. Right,
I was very lucky.
I would just... Try to stick to the threat at first, and then maybe build out and try aggression. I wouldn't go straight aggression, because then you're going to get to something like Ultron, and you might get overrun and feel like, why isn't this working? Well, maybe because you try learning like how to balance threat and attack first.
Playing aggression sounds simpler, but it isn't.
Yes.
It takes a very like minute attention to detail and fine decision making to actually make it work. And you're not going to have that the first time you play the game. Even like just scrolling around to like the Facebook page and the Discord and even the BGG forums, there's a lot of people that are like not complaining, but just saying like Rhino is beating us and we're losing. And when you look at what they're doing, they're actually, you know, trying to use those swinging web kicks in the first couple of turns, and it's hurting them because it's not easy to do. It's very, very hard, and they end up losing to the advanced treachery because they left two or three threats.
Yep. Can't ignore that main scheme. And speaking of that, don't ignore side schemes either. Those can wreck your day. If you let side schemes pile up, you're gonna have a bad time.
I'd say prioritize the hazard side schemes that draw extra cards. Those are generally the worst, and I usually just will do whatever I can to get rid of those as soon as possible. The acceleration side schemes, you have to weigh how much threat they're adding versus how much it'll take to get rid of them. And it's usually worth getting rid of them, but not always. And the other, I forget, the...
Crisis
side schemes. Yeah, you get rid of them, like, last, because they're just preventing you from putting... Unless, like, the main scheme is about to go off. And then you really need to hammer those. But, I mean, those are, like, the lowest priority. So, I think that's generally my priority order for side schemes.
I would say don't discount the strength of the acceleration token. A lot of times you see you're like, well, it's just one more threat, it's not going to do much. There's multiple games that I've not lost because I've been one less than it's just like I made it up to six. So if I wouldn't have gotten that acceleration token or scheme out, I would have lost. So don't be fooled. They are strong. They're important. Sometimes you have to ignore them, like you were saying, Ben, but that's a decision that you have to make. Don't take it automatically.
Yeah, that's more towards the end of the game. Or if you're playing Rhino solo,
it's always.
Keep in mind what's in the encounter deck, too. If you've been playing and you know you haven't seen a single advance yet, let's say you're playing Rhino, and there's two or three threat on the scheme, unless you have to, don't flip back, because chances are you're going to hit that advance and then you're going to lose. Keep in mind what you're revealing. Don't just like look at it and be like, okay, because like if you forget that you've revealed certain cards and you don't like look later, you'll probably fall into this false sense of comfort. You're like, oh, I can flip. When in reality, that's one of the worst things you could probably do.
Mm-hmm.
If you know you've seen a charge in the deck, maybe you don't have to worry about it as much as the second one coming out.
Check the discard pile is public knowledge, so if you have any doubt, take a second and look through it. You know where you're looking for, so you'll see that advances right away if they're there or not.
That's a very good point. And that'll come with more time. The more you play the games, the more you'll learn what each deck is like. I think another thing you always need to think about, and this is something that's hard, I think, for first-time players. It was hard for me at Gen Con when I was first playing the game, and that is, at the end of the player phase, when you're getting ready to draw up, and you have the option to discard cards from your hand before drawing up so that you could draw more cards, I think my general strategy, and y'all might disagree, but my general strategy is, unless it is what I think is going to be really important for next turn, I don't keep any cards that cost three or more, and I try to have only one or two cards in my hand before I draw up my new hand. Now, that depends, too, of course. Like, in She-Hulk, when I'm in aggression form, She-Hulk has the smallest hand size of only four, so I'm very aggressive with just discarding cards from her to just get through my deck because I'm only drawing up to a hand of four. What do you guys think about that?
I think that makes a lot of sense. I have a story from Gen Con. I was demoing, I think this was my first demo of the game, and I had a hand, I was playing Spider-Man Protection, and I had a hand, and it had like Counterpunch, Haymaker, and like some other cards, I don't remember what they were, and I was like, oh, I'll hold on to these, this will come in handy later. No, they won't. If they're not good then, and you want to go through your deck, get your better cards. Don't just hold on to cards that you might think will come in later, because chances are that's hindering you rather than benefiting you.
I like it.
That's especially important when you're playing heroes that need to go through that whole deck the first time. Iron Man and Black Panther probably are the best examples of that. With Iron Man, you know, you got Supersonic Punches, you get Reporcel Blast. They're cheap cards, so why not keep them? Unless I need to defeat a minion, I will never keep those cards.
doing my first run of the deck, because I want to go through my deck, play all those upgrades, play play the supports, play your Pepper Prods, play your Stark Tower. You really want to do that quickly. So there's no point in you keeping a high damage card if it's not helping you get ready for that second run of the deck where you're going to be dealing damage. So even if a card's cheap, but it's not helping you set up, discarding it, it's probably the best. Counterpoints to that?
No, I mean, I think...
I would say protection is the aspect most likely to keep cards, because they have the get behind me to cancel a key treachery, or they might keep like first aid to heal, or counterpunch if they're defending. It's not... you generally will want to do that once you're already set up, though, or, you know, as set up as you're going to get. Like, once you stabilize the game, you might want to just keep it stable, but, you know, still, I don't tend to keep very many cards between
That's
turns.
A question that I actually have. Someone who doesn't play protection and never, I think, only once I played Spider-Man, you have that, what's the name? Despite the enhanced spider
enhanced
sense.
Enhanced spider sense, yeah.
And get behind me. What is your decision when keeping or not keeping those cards?
If I feel confident that I will win unless I draw a bad treachery, then I'll keep those cards. If I'm like, okay, I'm just trying to keep set up, I'm just trying to keep it going, I'll just spend them. I tend to spend them, and I probably spend them too much or discard them too much. But still, I don't like holding on to cards for multiple turns.
That's what makes Black Widow so good. She's always available.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's the pitfall of Spider-Man with enhanced spider sense, is you get that card and you're like, oh, I feel safe. I can have this. If I have this card in my hand and I flip back to alter ego mode or get by me, those cards are gone.
Yeah.
And a lot of the times, and you probably might disagree with me on this, if I'm flipping back to alter ego mode, I might discard backflip just to get through my deck if I'm playing, depending on the aspect.
Oh, yeah.
If I'm playing leadership, I will discard. If I'm flipping to alter ego mode, I don't need backflip that turn. I'm going to look for more cards that I want to play. And if I have allies out who can block for me, I don't need backflip.
I almost never hold on to backflip. I just always spend it.
The same thing if I play Nick Fury. I'm not going to hold on to my back. I'm going to use backflip to pay for Nick Fury because now I have a blocker for the turn.
Yep.
Yep, it's the same thing. Matt, are you on the document? Do you want to read the last one that we have in there, if you can see it? If not, I'll go ahead and read it.
Yeah, no, you do it.
Okay. Last kind of tip for this basic strategy is take your time. Don't rush. You're going to make mistakes, you're going to make suboptimal plays. Nobody's rushing you in this game. Just take your time. That villain, he looks scary, but he's going to at least let you wait and punch him in the face a little bit. So just take your time, don't make crazy mistakes, and just enjoy the game and just have fun playing your cards and learn more. You'll learn better if you take more time with it. Our next category of... It could go under basic strategy, but really I think there's this whole strategy to this one too, so we're making it its own category, and that is when to flip between hero and alter ego mode. And Carlos, why don't you start us off with this one?
Okay, first of all, this is one of the things that makes this game great and one of the most original things this game has going versus other hero type board games and tabletop games. And I think that there's two questions that you need to look when you're deciding when to flip and how do you want to end up your turn in alter ego mode or in hero mode. And that is the two conditions on how you lose the game. Scheme, the villain scheming, or you getting knocked out. So you're going to look every turn at the start of the turn or towards the end, you're going to look at those schemes and you're going to look at your health and you're going to ask yourself, what's going to happen if I stay this way? And then after you ask yourself, and you realize that the risk for both of the ways that you're staying, like, you get to ask, what is your plan? Do you gain anything by flipping this turn? Do you want to flip early because you got a lot of stuff to do? Or do you want to flip at the end of the turn just to, like, let things, just because you need to be in in another way? So look at those things and decide based on those factors.
It's good. That makes, I like that.
A lot of sense. I think if when you are trying to decide when to flip, you try to figure out at the beginning of your turn. Now, obviously, if you have card draw effects, do that stuff first before you decide if you're going to flip. Because, and then figure out how you're going to get there to make sure that's the safest option for you. So let's say you're playing Rhino and the scheme's at 3 in the solo game. How are you going to make sure that that scheme is low enough that you feel comfortable flipping, even with the possibility of advance, that you're going to be fine? So it's a lot of just plan it out. You don't have to just be like, I'm at low health, let me flip now. If you have an ally in play that can block, let them block. If the scheme's high up, just think about the game elements. And this is part of where the take your time comes into play. Look at the board. Think about it. You don't have to rush through this because this game is very friendly to new players. Just have fun with it.
Yeah, I like it. No, I agree. Flipping is one of those things, especially it's going to be different with every hero. And that's one of the exciting things about this game too, to me, is that every hero kind of has different benefits, you know, and each hero's side, alter ego side, is very different in what they provide. And, you know, She-Hulk does 2 damage every time she flips. Spider-Man, though, when he's Peter Parker, you get that extra resource. And so think about what's, and you'll get better at this. Again, the more you play the game, you'll realize each hero kind of has a strategy that you want to go with, especially if you're playing a certain aspect. And part of that strategy is their alter ego form and what benefits you're going to get from that alter ego form. Let's go ahead and move on then. Our next category is order of operations, and we all weren't sure what Sam meant when he typed this category in, so we're going to hand it to Sam.
Okay, so first defining what order of operations is, it's when do you play your cards for max efficiency? So if, for example, like if I have 3 cards in my hand, what order do I play them in to provide the most efficiency? And this might not be as big of a deal in the core. When you get to Ms. Marvel, this will be the entire point of Ms. Marvel. And will you, if you win, is how you base your order. But some examples of this are if a villain has toughness and you have damage dealing events in your hand, how are you going to deal with the toughness before you play the damage thing? So are you going to attack? Do you have an ally that has 1 attack or something that you can put into play and attack them with? Other examples include something like getting rid of a crisis scheme before getting threat off the main scheme. So that's kind of what order of operations is. And it's something that it's more complex. And this is the stuff that starts breaking away from beginner to a little more advanced, is knowing that order. Like a basic one, draw your cards first. Figure out your entire options for the turn and what you're going to do. Is it starting to make a little more sense?
Yeah, that one that you just mentioned is actually a big one I really want to bring up and point at, because I was playing the game with one of my friends at our local game shop the other night. I brought it when I first came in, and I brought it. I said, all right, I'm going to be at the game shop, you know, if anybody wants to come. And so this guy came out and we played together. And that was one of the first things that I had to really kind of focus in on, was like, all right, make sure you always draw your cards first. And I make that mistake too. I'll play cards and realize, oh, I haven't used my Avengers Mansion yet. And then I'll draw it and be like, oh man, this would have really changed my turn. Dag nabbit. So get all your options before you do anything.
Another example could be, let's say it's a multiplayer game and the last player has made the call and Maria Hill's in their Discord pile. Now, this happened to us in one of our games completely by accident. This game was one of the wackiest we've played because there was just a lot of like strategic misplays because like we were having fun. And I didn't play make the call on the first player's turn. I played it on my turn and everyone else went. And so they draw their card after their turn happened. And like, that was a big mistake. If someone has a way for everyone to draw cards, let them do that. Like if you have make the call Marie Hill, let the last player do it before everyone's turn starts. And like, the great thing about this game is you can call another player for actions. So if there's something that if they do it first, it'll benefit your turn. Let them do it. Obviously, if it's within the rules of the action calling.
I was actually going to leave this for when we talk about multiplayer. Bring it up. Order of operations changes when you're playing multiplayer. So look at your cards very carefully. And make sure you really need that Avengers mansion. Make sure you really need that helicarrier, because if not, your other teammates might need it more. And you can give it to them. You can be like, there's no point in drawing an Avengers mansion just to draw a card that you're going to discard because you can't play it or you don't need it. And you have a friend who's playing She-Hulk. She might need that to be able to play her Gamma Slam. She might need that to get the split personality. So the order of operations when you're playing solo and when you're playing multiplayer is very,
yeah, very important. Very important. Go ahead, Sam.
The best way for you to learn how to do order of operations, how to think about it out of the core, is Black Panther and his upgrades. Because you get to choose the order, this is the best way to learn how do you maximize a Wakanda Forever. That's best for you. So it's the biggest thing is looking at the game state, which is a big common theme in strategy. By doing that, it'll help you understand this idea a little better. And then when Ms. Marvel comes out, that'll be a really good way to enforce this idea that order matters in a card game.
Yeah, I think she's really going to really bring out, and I think there's going to be a big difference between people who really know how to play Ms. Marvel and people who are going to be like, I don't really know what she's doing. I think she's going to have a lot of intricacy to her, which is really exciting. Let's go on to our next topic, which is solo tips. And Ben, why don't you start us off with our solo tips?
Okay, so solo is substantially different from multiplayer because you're on your own. I think in general it's more swingy because you're drawing like the kind of card you draw makes a big difference. In a four player game, what one person draws doesn't make that big of a difference usually, unless it's a really, really bad card. But yeah, and so if you draw an advance at the wrong time, that could just be game over. So some tips that I've found is, think about swinginess. Also, make sure that you can handle as many different things as possible that come out. You can handle an extra attack or an extra scheme before you pass the turn. Also, in solo, you're more likely to include like weak cards that'll cover your weaknesses. Like, I think that Haymaker is a lot better in solo, in certain solo builds, than it is in multiplayer. Because sometimes just dealing 3 damage lets you kill a minion that otherwise you wouldn't be able to kill. And that is very important in like justice builds, which can struggle with damage sometimes. And if you're not playing justice, you might want to play an emergency so that you can cancel some bad, an extra scheme or something that might come out. Or you really need to focus on the cards that help you deal with things that your aspect's bad at.
I think that thing that you mentioned about solo being swinging, that people really need to be aware and need to prepare for that. There's, you need to keep that scheme at zero, that main scheme at zero, as much as possible.
Yeah.
Think about Rhino. Even when you're in hero mode, if you have two, three schemes there, Rhino can win. He can draw a scheme, an advance, and that could just end the game right away. So you really need to control that scheme a lot more than what you need to do in multiplayer, because in multiplayer you only worry about the scheme when it's getting high. In solo, you're always worrying about that main scheme.
Right. And also in solo, sometimes you might want to, like, not in Rhino, but in the other villains, you might want to strategically let them advance the scheme. You're like, okay, I'm going to have to stay in hero mode too long, or I'm going to have to sacrifice this scheme so that I can set up and help prevent their second phase of the scheme from happening. That happens a lot with Ultron, or even Claw. Sometimes you'd be like, okay, I could stay in hero mode and prevent from advancing the scheme, but then I'll probably die, and that's not worth it.
Matt's back from cleaning up his after his cat who tried to destroy his house. So Matt, do you have any solo tips?
No, you think you guys covered. The main thing is watch out for the main scheme, because, like, especially on Rhino, you can just suddenly go from zero to 7th thread and it's over.
Yep. Exactly.
I think something about solo is you can't rely on other players. And that's something, if you play a lot of multiplayer and then you go to a solo game, you have to remember that. You can't ask the other player for a card because there is no other player. You have to be able, for your deck, you have to make sure your deck can handle the game without needing or relying on someone else to do some aspect of the game for you. It'll be also hard for just all damage to work at first, because the threat might get out of control.
Ben, did you have something you wanted to add?
Yeah, the last thing is that in solo, I mentioned before with the side schemes that the hazard is the worst, and that goes like double in solo, because it's literally doubling the number of encounter cards you draw if you get a hazard side scheme. So
yeah.
You want to make sure that goes away as quickly as possible. So it is important to have a decent amount of thwart in your deck just to handle those, if nothing else.
Yeah, definitely in solo, it becomes more important to hold on to certain like a for justice, if you're playing justice. It's a card that sometimes I would really think a lot before letting go, because if you're flipping a hazard scheme, that's the card that's going to get rid of that automatically with no problem next turn. Even backflip with Spider-Man, since defense becomes a little bit more complicated solo, then that's a card that you might want to hold on a bit with.
Well, let's go on to our next topic, which is multiplayer tips, the next category. I'm going to kick this one off because I have not played this game solo yet at all. I know I've got the cards in my hand, in my box, but work is a butt, so I haven't actually had time to play solo yet. I've only played multiplayer, and I think the biggest thing for multiplayer is teamwork and communication. Somebody wrote that down in the tips. I don't know who it was, but that is, and they put it in the first spot. I don't know if that was on purpose or not, but that is the number one goal. You've got to work together. If everybody is just looking out for themselves and not really communicating, you're not going to know what each other's doing. Maybe you don't have to thwart because the Iron Man is going to thwart for six because he's got, you know, the one that gives him one more thwart, and then he's got his arc reactor, so he's readying and clearing 6th threat every round. So you don't have to really worry about the threat. So you focus on the minions, and this character, you focus on thwarting, and this character, you do some damage to the villain. So everybody can kind of have more of a specified role. For example, Iron Man, like I just said, usually does the thwarting in your multiplayer setting. If I'm playing She-Hulk and I've got a Justice Iron Man, I'm probably playing Aggression She-Hulk because I just want to do as much damage as possible, because Iron Man will take care of all the scheming for days. And I can just really focus on bringing the hammer down. Let's go to Matt, since you were away for a little bit. Why don't you go ahead and what else do you have for multiplayer tips?
Yeah, I guess specializing in the deck. Yeah, this is at this point, specializing is somewhat better, but it's good to have options open because sometimes you might not get anything in one deck. It's good to open the other. Leadership gets very good when you have multiple players because you can use make the call to get an ally from another player's deck, and you can play lead from the front on another player.
Sam, did you have something you wanted to say about this?
About teamwork and communication. Remember, this game is cooperative. This isn't an all-out war for Nick Fury or any of the other, or for card draw. So, like, don't be the one person who's like, I need that card draw every single turn.
Somebody in this chat?
Not me.
I think the real issue is agreeing over Nick Fury.
for a little preface to that, there was a game, I think it was me, John, and Matt. I mean, we were playing.
It was.
I was playing leadership, and I played Nick Fury. And the next turn, I made the call, Nick Fury, and Matt was like, what? He was like, oh, what did you just do? That was my entire turn. And I was like, nope, he's my Nick Fury. And so we had an entire battle, the rest of the entire game, on who got to play Nick Fury.
And I was just kind of sitting in the middle of these two guys like, why can't we be friends? Why can't we be friends?
Also, I only play a little bit of Arkham. I know Arkham has that exploration thing where you gotta communicate a lot. But I think when it comes to enemy, it's a bit like Lord of the Rings, where it kind of feels that each player is in their own pocket. And you might have a sentinel or a ranged character to help you, but you're dealing with a lot of things by yourself in Lord of the Rings and in a lot of other cooperative games that I played. In this game, everything is happening to everybody at the same time. So a player might be engaged with an enemy, but that only means that enemy's targeting them. It's everybody can attack that. Everybody can defend against it. So the possibilities that you have for defend or to attack really changes what the other person can do. So somebody can defend for me and I'm playing Iron Man, that's one more turn that I can stay in hero mode and I don't have to flip. But if I don't know that, then I can't plan around that. So that's why it's very important for the leadership player to say, hey, do you need me to keep an ally, not use it this turn so he doesn't die and I can use it for you? That communication is very important because it's going to drive how you're going to play a lot. And something that this game does that is different in solo is that when you're playing three players or four players, chances are that you're going to go through the entire encounter deck. So Shadow of the Past, it's not a thing that might happen. It becomes a thing that's going to happen most likely. So you really need to be able to kind of like fight the whole encounter deck and everything bad that it can throw at you. And if you don't plan together, it's going to destroy you 100% for sure.
I think in multiplayer, the game is never really stale. There's every aspect of this game involves talking to your teammates and figuring out what to do. Like, you can plan out your turn and be like, I think I'm going to do this, but I might need a card. Is there anyone who can give it to me? And then everyone looks at their hands, they talk about it, and they figure out who can do it. And even in the villain stage, can you defend for me? Or if I throw this ally in front of you, will that help you? Stuff like that. It's really nice to be able to set up a game and not feel like I'm not contributing when it's not my turn.
That's a good point. This and game, I think, does that above every other LCG that they've put out there.
Yeah, remember those events that are action in your hand. You can play it on another player's turn. You can play Wakanda Forever, even if you're last player on the first player's turn, and that matters a lot.
Well, let's go on to our last category, and that is how to make the game different. Sam, how are we going to spice up our games after we've been playing for so many times? What are we going to do to make the game different?
So after you get comfortable with the game, you maybe you've played all the villains on standard with their recommended, or maybe you've only used the starter decks. So some things you can do different. You could build a deck. If you've already built decks, like the more popular decks, like Iron Man Justice, Black Panther Leadership, maybe try a different deck, like Iron Man Leadership, or so or anything, Captain Marvel protection or something like that. Another thing you could do, change it to expert. Try it on expert. See if you like it. See if it's something that you think you'll benefit from. I know a lot of us, we rarely play off expert anymore because it's more fun for us, at least for me. Randomize the villain. Like, there's some things I do where I roll a die to choose the villain, to choose the, if it's standard expert, I choose the encounter set randomly. And then I'll choose my hero and aspect randomly and build the deck and just play like that. There's a lot of things you can do just to try and make more out of the game until we get the next pack or until we get a next villain or something.
One last thing about that. The fact that we have such a small card pool makes building a deck not easy, but at least quick. So that whole randomizing your hero and your aspect, that's a quick thing. You're not going to spend half an hour looking at all the cards to build a deck quickly. You don't have that much to choose from. Just put it on. And even like go to 50 cards if you want, and that way you'll do it even quicker.
Okay. Ben, do you have anything to add to this?
I would just encourage everyone to switch up your hero. Even if you have a favorite hero or like a least favorite hero, you're like, oh, I only want to play Spider-Man. I would encourage you to play all the heroes at least once because they're all very, very different and they're all super fun. So that will definitely give you more plays.
Nice. Matt, do you have anything else? Matt?
Since we lost Matt
oh,
again.
We did. We lose him again. Oh, no, the cat.
I'm fine, yeah.
Okay, he's here. Good.
I don't really have anything else to add.
Cool.
Okay.
Awesome. Well, this was great, guys. I think these are great beginner tips, but I think these are really a lot of what we've talked about tonight is just stuff to remember in general when you're playing this game. I think really anybody at any card level can use this stuff, and I hope that everybody's enjoyed this. If you want us to go in more in depth on any of these topics, we have a Facebook page and we have a Discord channel. So please, if you want us to go more in depth on a hero or on villain strategies, let us know. And we'd love to go back and I'm sure revisit heroes and talk more in depth about the strategy of playing those heroes, especially since we all have our own different favorite heroes. But again, thank you everyone for listening. We hope that you can join us on November the 12th on our Discord channel at 8:30 Eastern. And until next time, Excelsior! Onwards and upwards.